Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thank you one and all for being with us. Wherever you are, whenever you are, because people listen to us at their convenience all over the world, which is really cool. My guest tonight is David J. Brown, and he has a pretty extraordinary book, Dreaming Wide Awake, and we'll be talking to him in a few minutes, right after tonight's metaphysical musing. People often ask me, so what's your story? How did you get here? And I always tell them, that's a long story. We can't do that now. But after the little enjoyment I had over dinner tonight, I've been thinking about parts of my story because the person that I had dinner with has been a friend for over 30 years. And the way I met him is pretty amusing and kind of informative of David's journey. So I've mentioned before that I spent 3 years in California studying with two healers, and that for a year and a half of that, I was living in a camper and working nights in a psych hospital. So when I talk about walkabout, I really have a sense of it from my own experience. And at a certain point in all of this craziness, a group of people said, we're going to Haiti to do medical missionary work. Want to come? And it's pretty unusual for New Age healer types to go do medical missionary work rather than a Christian church. And I was like, wow, Haiti, won't that be great? And had to dismantle the life that I had put together to make it possible to leave, but also figure out how I was going to do all this. So I didn't have the cash to buy the ticket to Haiti. But part of walkabout is you just trust. And I had some friends that I had met while I was living in California. We were in a personal growth training weekend together. They were staff, and I was one of the participants. And we had kept in touch, and they moved somewhere in New England. I didn't really understand where they went. But I called them and said, here's what's going on. Could I borrow the money? And they said, yeah, we'll meet you in New York, because I was going to New York to visit my daughter before I went to Haiti. And so these friends drove, I didn't know how far, but it was a 4 or 5 hour drive for them, down to New York to meet me and give me a hug and give me $200, which doesn't seem like a whole lot of money, except it was long enough ago that $200 was the equivalent of $2,000 now. And I bought my plane ticket and went to Haiti. And they said, you know, you'll pay us or you won't pay us. We know you're supposed to do this and we want to support you. It was a pretty extraordinary gift of friendship. And I had my extraordinary experience living in a third world country with a dictator and with psychotic paramilitary people running the towns that I was living in. And it came time to go back. And that's a long story also. But at some point, I called my friends in Massachusetts and they said, oh, come on up. We haven't seen you in a while. You haven't seen where we're living. Come on up. It's really pretty up here. So I had no idea where I was going. I got on a bus and I came up to Massachusetts, and they picked me up at the bus stop in Amherst, which, as it turns out, is a place I wound up living for a very long time. And they took me to this place up in the hills where they were living in a group house. And we had a good time. And they kept telling me about this guy who lived two houses down that they thought we would really get along. It just seemed like we should meet. So one evening after dinner, there's a knock on the door, and in walks Tom. And Tom takes one look at me and says, oh, it's you. And we both laughed and hugged and went, boy, I haven't seen you in lifetimes. We didn't know why we knew each other, but we knew we had known each other for a very long time. And we were immediate friends. Very long story short, I wound up living in Massachusetts, first in the town that my friends were in, and then in the surrounding area, got married, raised a kid, all kinds of other things happened along the way, and half a lifetime later, I'm still living in the area. So thank you, Walt and Sarah, for getting me up here. But this evening, this afternoon, I got a call from Tom, who's been living in California and I haven't seen him a while. And he said, what you doing? I'm in the parking lot at CVS. Like, really? Well, I don't live down there now. I live up in Deerfield and I've got a couple of things going. Oh, I'll come up for dinner. Where should we meet? So Tom and I met at the little pizza place here that makes really good gluten-free organic pizza. And sat for hours, just two old guys in a booth telling each other stories and catching up. And I've had that experience many, many times of people walking over, getting a funny look on their face and saying, I know you. And my response is usually, yeah, you do. And I know you. And no, we'll never figure it out. And those are some of the most wonderful, magical moments in life and usually lead to adventures. So I encourage you to meet your old friends. And I'm pretty much convinced that we don't meet new friends. We just recognize old friends that we've known before. But it's been a wonderful evening and a wonderful time telling stories about adventures I haven't thought about for a while and enjoying the company of a very, very old dear friend. And I hope you get to do that too. And that's tonight's metaphysical musing. And let's spend some time with David J. Brown, who is the author of Dreaming Wide Awake. Thanks for being with us, David.
Well, thank you, David. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, we're going to have fun calling each other David. It's going to sound totally weird. Just how it is. So the first question I always ask guests is, how did you wind up doing this? Well, how did your life unfold? What was the journey, the walkabout, the adventure that led you to this place of writing these books?
Well, I'll tell you what got me interested in lucid dreaming and psychedelic shamanism, which is the subject of my new book, Dreaming Wide Awake. I mostly got interested as a teenager, around the age of 16, not long after I was I was interested in altered states of consciousness. I got interested in meditation. I smoked cannabis. I tried LSD when I was 16. And several days after I had my first psychedelic experience, I had a lucid dream, a spontaneous lucid dream. For those of your listeners who don't know what a lucid dream is when you become awake and aware in a dream while it's actually happening, so that you know that you're in a dream and that you can then act in a way that takes advantage of this wonderful opportunity. In our ordinary state of consciousness, what we do is we confuse our dream with the waking world, and we think that we're in the waking world when we're actually dreaming. When we have a lucid dream, we know that we're dreaming while it's actually happening, and so we can actually operate in the dream world as though we are awake, and it gives you an incredible opportunity to fly, to go through walls, to make things appear, to act out any of your wildest fantasies, and it really is quite incredible. So I just spontaneously had this experience when I was around 16 years old one night, and read about it a couple of months after having the experience. I read about it in a book by Carlos Castaneda called A Journey to Ixland, and I knew exactly what he was talking about when he was mentioning lucid dreaming in that book, and I got very interested in it. And it, when I was in my early 20s, I met Stephen LaBerge through a mutual friend, Dr. Oscar Janiger. And Stephen LaBerge is a Stanford researcher who is the person who made lucid dreaming a science. And it was through my interactions with him that I learned that lucid dreaming is actually a learnable skill. Even though it happens to people spontaneously, you can actually practice techniques and exercises that increase the probability of having a lucid dream. And that got me very, very interested. So I started practicing those techniques, and I've been practicing them now for, gosh, you know, like 30 years now. So I've had, you know, many, many hundreds of lucid dreams, and it's something that I've used to for a lot of different manners. I've used it to help, first of all, as fantasy fulfillment. I mean, what could possibly be more fun than you know, flying through space, you know, having sex with your ideal lover, going into outer space. I mean, it's just incredible what you can do. But even more than that is the potential that lucid dreams have for being able to practice new skills and become better at particular things. Like, let's say you want to practice your martial arts skills, or your dance, or your ballet, or your hula hooping, or whatever it is. You can practice it in lucid dreams, and there's actually scientific evidence to show that what you practice in a lucid dream, you actually get better at in your waking state. And So it was through all these different things over the years that you know, I've learned quite a bit about the different what's possible with lucid dreaming, and that's what led me to writing the book that I just wrote, Dreaming Wide Awake,
which is really fascinating. And you know, one of the little vignettes that happens to me frequently is I have friends that are gamers, and they say, aren't you into gaming? Don't you ever do this? I say, no, I do shamanic work. I do the real stuff that you're doing in make-believe. I meet really strange people who give me objects of power and tell me things I need to know to go to the next level, to do the next challenge. That's all my work's about. And they say,
there's an interesting correlation between virtual reality and the type of simulations that people experience with computers and lucid dreaming. We know right. that people who practice, you know, virtual reality, and people who actually practice computer games and gaming a lot, have more lucid dreams than the average person. So there's something about fabricating artificial worlds in your mind that gives you this ability that seems to carry over into our dream life as well as our waking
right.
life.
Right. And I wonder what the various gizmos now that you can wear that look like glasses that let you have a screen in front of your eye, so you're actually a walking computer, are affecting how people do it, the whole virtual reality thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's an interesting correlation. There's actually a scientific study that's been done that shows that people who play computer games have more lucid dreams. It hasn't been done with virtual reality, but I think even more so. Virtual reality is getting so incredibly sophisticated now. I mean, it really is like it's really competing with the waking world. I'm sure in 10 years from now, we're going to have virtual reality systems that will be virtually indistinguishable from the reality that we experience in the waking world. We're also developing technologies that will allow us to lucid dream on command. There's a group with a Kickstarter program right now looking to do this. There's scientific evidence that shows that whenever you use something called transcranial electrical brain stimulation, direct electrical stimulation across the scalp, which is safe and it can effectively stimulate different areas of the brain, when you induce gamma waves, very, very fast brain waves, into the prefrontal cortex, an area on the front of the left side of the brain, you will, when people are experiencing this, when they're in the middle of a REM sleep, rapid eye movement stage of sleep, they will experience a lucid dream around 80% of the time. And so we have the technology to do this, and this Kickstarter program is looking to fund the development of this technology so that it'll be miniaturized and mass-produced so that anyone can just wrap these things around their head when they go to sleep for around $300. And then lucid dream on command. It looks like we're, you know, just really a few months away from this. The technology is already here, and they're actually building these things as I speak. They should be available in the spring. So
extraordinary. And you don't have to spend the decades in a cave somewhere meditating to get your brain into the gamma wavelength.
Exactly.
Because that's the way typically human beings create that frequency in their brains is by very, very deep meditation for a very, very long time.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is a shortcut to some of those states of consciousness that no longer require 20 years of a dedication and persistence.
Yeah. The good news is that it doesn't take all that time. The bad news is there's a reason that people did do it and take all that time because of the changes that could only occur in your consciousness over that period of time.
Sure. Well, just because you can activate these states of consciousness doesn't mean that you're really mature enough and ready enough to deal with the consequences of them. So it definitely takes education and learning about these things before you're equipped to deal with the seriousness of exploring your own mind.
Well, so how much experimentation has been done with the technologies? I want to talk more about lucid dreaming in general and what it's like and all of that. But how much experimentation has happened with the technologies? Is this very new? Is it something that has been worked on with people of many different ages? I mean, what do we know?
This technology is brand new. I mean, really, like in the last year. And what I'm describing is only in development right now. I mean, there have been other electronic technologies that have been in use for the last, 10, 15 years to induce lucid dreaming, but they haven't been done in the way that I was just describing. There is a technology that Stephen LaBerge developed. It was originally called the Dreamlight, then it was called the Nova Dreamer, and the model that I used was called the REM Dreamer. They were basically all the same machine, pretty much. What they were is it's like a pair of goggles that you put on and wear, cushion goggles that you wear when you go to sleep, and they have a motion detectors in front of the eye portion of the goggles with an infrared motion detector, so they can detect when you're in rapid eye movement. Rapid eye movement is the stage of sleep when you're most actively dreaming, and during this phase, your eyes literally are moving all around and back and forth, and so this device will pick up on the rapid eye movement, and then what it does is it emits a very, very small, very low-level light, a little like starts blinking, like a little light-emitting diode, and it's not enough light generally to wake you up, but it's enough light to get incorporated into your dream. So what will happen is then during the dream is you will actually see something flashing. People see it as like police lights or flashing objects or something just starts twinkling or sparkling in front of them. That's usually when people then see that, that's an indication that they're dreaming. And if they're properly trained, they'll see that as a dream sign and then become lucid and wake up in the dream. So that's the technology that's been available for the last 10 years or so, and that's the one that I tried for my book, and I actually got pretty good results with that, and anyone can buy that on Amazon right now. But this new technology is, that hasn't really been tested that much. Just there was that one study that was done. I mean, it was based on the development of this project was based on two studies. There was one study that showed that when people are lucid dreaming, they tend to have more gamma waves in their prefrontal cortex. And then there was a second study that showed that when you use transcranial stimulation and you induce gamma waves in the prefrontal cortex, 80% of the time people have lucid dreams. So someone now is taking that and trying to develop a little miniaturized and mass-produced technology from that allows anyone to be able to induce gamma waves into their prefrontal cortex during REM sleep. How effective this is going to be, I don't know. These are going to be the first models, so I would think that there probably is going to be some bugs to work out, and probably they're going to need a little perfecting over the years. But isn't it exciting that these things are actually in development right now as we speak?
It's really fascinating because lucid dreaming was just one of those things you hear about if you study spiritual stuff and meditation and read books about all of that. It will come up as one of the things that happens. Or people will talk about it, but for most people, they'll never hear about it. They'll never know that it's even possible or what the benefits would be.
Well, I'll tell you, you know what really surprised me, David, was how many people that I encountered during the writing of my book that didn't even believe lucid dreaming was real or that it was highly exaggerated. Right. You know, I thought because I had been having them since I'd been a teenager and because I knew so many people who had them and because I had met Stephen LaBerge and I knew there was scientific evidence for it, that I thought everybody knew that lucid dreams were real. Right. And I was really surprised that there were people who were like, you know, very skeptical of it and thought that we were exaggerating, like you were just dreaming that you were having a dream that you were awake. And I was like, no, I wasn't. I was awake in the dream. And for people who haven't experienced it, it really is hard to describe that you fully wake up. You have access to all your waking world memories. You know your body's lying asleep in bed, safe and sound. You know, you can remember everything you planned to do in the lucid dream. You have all of your memories. So it's really literally like waking up, except that the world around you is the dream.
Yeah, well, there are so many spiritual or I don't know whether we could call this a spiritual experience or how we define it, but there's so many of those experiences that very few people have, and it's the belief versus experience thing.
Yeah,
if you hear the story and it comes from a reputable source, you might believe that they have had the experience, and you can believe that it's possible. But until you have the experience yourself, it's just hearsay. It's just a story. And it's hard to believe if you've only heard it once. So.
Yeah. It's hard for people to understand just how it's possible. I mean, until you've had the experience, it must sound so mysterious. But it really is one of the most amazing things. You know, you mentioned whether there's a spiritual dimension to it, and it really has, I think, an important spiritual dimension. It's been used as a practice for thousands of years, and as a part of Tibetan Buddhism, as a way to help reach enlightenment and a way to help prepare for the death of the body and the reincarnation of the soul. So it's in many cultures. It's part of a shamanic traditions, and so it's seen as a way to help connect with the more spiritual dimensions of reality.
Yeah, it shows up in a lot of the old traditions, but again, most people are not looking at that stuff if they're not involved in that work.
Lucid dreaming has also become a part of popular culture too. It's been at least like 10 movies now that have talked about it. The movie Inception, probably being the most popular one, but there was also Waking Life and a number of others. And so it's really, you know, there's a couple of computer games I think that mention lucid dreaming. So it seems like it's really worked its way into the popular culture. There's dozens and dozens of books on the subject. There's so many books written.
Right. Well, and then people are in the position of saying, gee, I hope that's true, but it's just a story.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I'm sure a lot of people think that and don't realize that just how amazing it is and how real it is and how powerful it is and how accessible it is for everyone. I mean, there's nothing stopping anyone from, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, a good percentage of your listening audience has a lucid dream tonight. You know, just from talking about it, thinking about it, you know, people have lucid dreams.
Well, and we have an interesting and wonderful audience. We're going to go to break in a little bit, and I want to make sure people know how to find you online. What's your website?
My website's www.mavericksofthemind.com. And David J. Brown, J-A-Y, Brown, you can find me on Facebook. That's probably one of the easiest ways to stay in touch with me.
Fantastic. Do you have new stuff coming up, things people should know about and plug into?
Well, The Dreaming Wide Awake was just published by Inner Traditions, and we're working now on a book called Women of Vision, which is going to be a collection of interviews with female visionary artists and also a collection of their artwork as well. Some of the people we have in that book include Alison Gray, Amanda Sage, Martina Hoffman, Josephine Wall, and about a dozen others, really, really very, very talented women, beautiful artwork.
Yeah, one of the things as I looked through your list of books and the people that you've interviewed for them is that you've had a fascinating life and met some very interesting people.
Yeah, I'm so fortunate. You know, yeah, I write about that in my book, The New Science of Psychedelics, which is unfortunately my publisher titled it that. And my title was Over the Edge of the Mind. It's really the story of all the interesting people that I've gotten to meet and work with over the years. I've been so fortunate, you know. Many of the people that were, to me, my heroes when I was younger, the people that, you know, that I read and that inspired me and that influenced my work, were people that then became colleagues of mine and that I was fortunate enough to work with later on.
So cool. We have to go to the break. We'll be back shortly, unless, of course, we get taller. My guest is David J. Brown, and this is The Farkas Files. I'm David Franklin Farkas. And don't go nowhere. We're going to have more fun. Stay with us.
Them for an hour. Dance, walk, play a sport, or cook a healthy meal. Because just moving a little and eating better every day can help make you and your child healthier.
Can we do it?
Yeah, you know that we can.
We'll ball it up.
Cause we know how to hoop.
We'll mess around.
Cause we know how to play.
We'll drop it down.
Drop it down.
We know how to dance. We'll veg it up.
Veg it up. Night and day.
Can we do it?
Search We Can online to find doable tips and activities that you can use every day to keep you and your kids healthy. Remember, that's We Can. A message from the Ad Council, HHS, and NIH's We Can program.
Hi, I'm Lisa Edelstein. Every day on set, I help my fictional doctors save the lives of imaginary patients in the TV series House. Every day in his village in Ethiopia, Barasa Ware helps save the lives of real children as a local health worker. Like many children in the developing world, the ones in Barasa's village are threatened by common illnesses that kill millions worldwide. But unlike villages without a local health worker, the children of Barasa's village get the care they need to survive. Imagine how many more children could be saved with your help. When you help local health workers like Barasa, you help children survive all over the world. See where the good goes at goodgoes.org and find out all the ways you can help the good go further. Brought to you by Save the Children and the Ad Council.
Wild animals face many risks at the hands of humans, but the pervasive and unprecedented destruction of their habitat threatens their very existence. More than 30% of the world's mammals and birds are considered threatened with extinction. We're in the midst of the first great mass extinction to be caused by humans. The only humane solution is land conservation and connecting fragmented wildlife habitats. For more than a decade, the Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust has worked with private landowners to protect wildlife by preserving natural habitats and establishing permanent sanctuaries. Creating shelters without walls, the Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust takes a unique stand in the National Land Trust community by prohibiting recreational and commercial hunting and trapping on our properties. Those who care deeply about animals must work together to ensure that wildlife will always have the wild places they need to survive and thrive. Call 1-800-729-SAVE. That's 1-800-729-SAVE. Or visit wildlifelandtrust.org.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with my guest, David J. Brown. And we've been talking about lucid dreaming. David, why don't you tell the audience a little bit more about what the experience is like? What's it like waking up in your dream?
Well, I'll tell you, it's remarkable. It's astonishing. It would be like right now, looking around the world and realizing that you're in a dream. I mean, the world is every bit as solid and every bit as detailed in a dream as it is right now. I mean, just stop what you're doing, look around at the world. This is what it's like to be in a lucid dream. You look around and you see everything around you and you're like, how could this be? You can pick up a pencil and you can examine all the tiny details in the pencil. It is truly remarkable. The thing is that not only is the dream world extremely realistic, but you then have the freedom to operate in the dream without any of the social or biological consequences that we have to deal with in the waking world. So you can, and also the laws of physics as well. So you only experience reality the way you believe it. So what you believe affects the way that you experience the dream. So you can fly through the air, you can fly through walls, you can make objects appear with your mind, you can engage in sexual experiences with your ideal lovers. There really is no limit except your imagination as to what you can do inside of a lucid dream. And the experience itself, when you look around, it's just, there's something about the environment in a lucid dream that actually looks like the colors are brighter and more enhanced than they are in general in the waking world. It's almost like you're experiencing it through a psychedelic or a psychedelic experience. There's something very, very, very bright about the world when you're inside of a lucid dream. And then you're just, wow, you know, I mean, the potential, the experience, what you can do inside of it is just, your imagination is truly the limit.
It's obviously the possibilities are incredible, but I'm trying to figure out what the question is.
Maybe a good thing to tell your viewers right now would be, how does one have a lucid dream? I can actually give a technique right now that your listeners can practice so they can start having lucid dreams themselves. One of the best ways to have a lucid dream is to get into the habit of asking yourself the question, am I dreaming right now? You have to really ask that question and answer it sincerely. If you just flippantly say, oh, of course I'm not dreaming right now, which is what you would tend to say, am I dreaming right now? You have to actually take a test, a reality test, to see if you're dreaming. And there's two really simple reality tests that you can do. If you look at a piece of paper and with some written words on it and memorize what those words say and look away and look back, in a dream, you will find that the words almost always change. They will almost always change every time. They don't stay constant for very long when you stare at words for some reason in a dream. Another technique is to pinch your nostrils closed and to try breathing through your nose with your nostrils closed. In the waking state, you won't be able to do it, but there's a glitch in the dream matrix, and you'll find that you'll have no problem doing that in a dream. So if you get into the habit of asking yourself, am I dreaming right now? And, you know, asking yourself that question, you know, every half an hour, you know, every hour or so, and then taking a reality test, look at, you know, a piece of paper, look away, or try breathing through your closed nostrils. Do that around once an hour every day, and you'll start doing that in your dreams. And when you start doing that in your dreams, one of these times you're going to see, and you're going to go, oh, my God, the words changed. And you're going to freak. You're going to go, oh, my God, I am dreaming right now. And it's going to blow your mind because you're not going to realize it. You're going to think you were awake. You're going to be like, how could that be? I'm awake right now. And then the secret is to not get too excited, because get really too excited and aroused, you'll fully wake up. And you'll, you know, so you have to learn to stay calm and, you know, keep your emotions kind of neutral and not get too physically aroused, because you don't want to completely physically wake up into your body. So learning right. to meditate and learning to keep your emotions calm is the first thing you want to do when you, attain lucidity in a dream. And then after that, you can start exploring the world and see what you can do there.
Yeah, don't try to fly immediately.
take everything slow, but yeah.
Reminds me of the scene in The Matrix where Morpheus says, there are rules. Some of them can be bent and others can be broken completely. As Neo learns that the rules of the physical world no longer apply. But he believes that they do until he believes that they don't.
Exactly. Exactly. That's a perfect metaphor for how we experience lucid dreaming. That's the perfect metaphor for it, because you don't even realize that you can do these things until you realize that you can. Otherwise, you'll just believe that, you know, that's why most of the time when we have dreams, we just seem to be, you know, operating in what appears to be the physics of the waking world. But we can completely change them around in a lucid dream very easily.
Right, right. And as we were talking briefly about the experience in some shamanic work, it's a lot like lucid dreaming, except you are wide awake. And what you're seeing is not this physical world. You're communicating with other levels of reality. Which
Certainly with ayahuasca or something in the Amazon, the shamanic brews they use, people often communicate with other types of intelligence or entities or other levels of reality. It's a very commonly reported experience with it.
I know that the use of psychedelics and ayahuasca is the thing at the moment, is very popular, but I've been doing this work now for decades and I've never used any of it. For whatever reason, the experiences have been available to me without any of the chemical assistance or any of the other stuff.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful. It's certainly not necessary, and that's wonderful when you're able to do that. And that's one of the wonderful things about lucid dreaming, is that there is nothing except your own mind.
Required, yeah.
Yeah, an interesting thing about lucid dreaming, I'll tell you, is you could then do a psychedelic in the lucid dream. You can do dream ayahuasca inside the lucid dream. And let me tell you, David, it works. It works.
Oh,
it really works.
No doubt.
You don't ever have to do, the real plant. You can do it all inside a lucid dream and actually have the experience. I've done it.
Right.
Other people have done it.
The thing that people, at least when they're first talking about doing those things, don't understand is that it's the spirit of the plant and the relationship with the spirit of the plant that does the healing and that makes all the changes. It's not just that you've ingested whatever the brew is that the shaman has created for you. It's the shaman has a relationship with the consciousness of the plants.
Yes, exactly.
And
for someone who hasn't experienced that, it's very hard for them to understand that. So thank you for saying that, because that is exactly, because I went down to the Amazon to heal myself from a childhood trauma. And the only way that I was able to do it was through dialoguing with the intelligence of the plant. It's a dialogue, and it is very, very powerful. And you don't have any doubt at the time that it's real.
I mean, there's no doubt in your mind. In my experience, the easiest plants to start with are trees.
Absolutely.
They're large. They're very ancient. And in our part of the world, they don't get any attention. It used to be that people walked through forests or down the street or whatever it is and talked to the plants and talked to the trees, and they got attention. And so if you give them attention, you immediately get appreciation and affection back.
Oh, no question. Yeah, I mean, I just watched my wife just hug a tree this afternoon. So, so yeah, we love the trees around our property. We live in the middle of a redwood forest in Northern California.
The redwoods are so wonderful.
We're surrounded by wonderful ancient creatures that just protect us and watch over us. And so beautiful. Yeah, the towering redwood forest is so beautiful.
Yeah, I haven't been there in decades. It was a wonderful experience when I was there. But even I lived in a neighborhood here in New England, and when I was getting ready to leave, and I had a relationship with the trees. I always talked to the trees, and one of the things I was taught is that the leaves and the wind are the voice of the trees. That if you're having a conversation with them, the wind will change and rustle the leaves.
And when you're in the right state of consciousness, I guess you can decipher it. And
Right. But even just getting that response is a real affirmation of what's going on. And I sort of expected that the trees right around my building would have some response. And I got both a sensation of how they felt about my leaving, but also I got a response on the leaves. And I went around the corner to a park that I didn't spend that much time in, but I had gone there every so often. And I got the same thing. They knew who I was.
Yeah.
Which was a very, very beautiful and profound experience. But I've been talking to trees for a very long time, and I don't talk out loud, so people don't think I'm crazy on the street.
yeah.
But trees are amazing, and they're easy to communicate with if you have the intention to do that.
Yeah, there's actually some, you know, quite a bit of scientific evidence now showing that plants are able to communicate with one another in ways that we were just completely unaware of.
Right.
And that there's a communication going on with the mycelium networks, you know, that underlie, you know, the fungal growth in forests.
Right. And there were early experiments that were just simple checking for electrical charges, similar to anything you would do on a human being to test for galvanic skin response and other things. And they would respond to violent thoughts. They would respond to the emotions of the people around them. If another plant got hurt, they would basically say, ouch, there would be a spike on the line.
Yeah.
And that stuff is, that's been around for decades that they've had that information.
Yes.
And
I'm sure in the science of the future is going to be able to unravel that even more. And we're going to eventually understand probably that they're, you know, very sophisticated, intelligent beings, plants.
Right. And there,
I mean,
there's
wonderful,
a whole...
have you seen these wonderful time-lapse photography where they show like a vine climbing up a tree? And when you see it in time-lapse mm-hmm. motion, you can really see that it's moving like an animal moves. It's touching something and feeling and then going backwards and moving back and testing things as it goes.
Yeah.
It's remarkable, and you know we just live in a different kind of time zone than they do, so that we see things in a more, you know, much more rapid way. So
right.
we miss what, you know, their movements, because it's happening at such a slow rate. But,
right.
But
and,
yeah.
And the same thing is true with tiny animals that are running at a very high speed. Hummingbirds.
Exactly.
Hummingbirds
yeah.
are running in a time frame that's totally different from human time.
Yeah.
And we don't really think about that. We just see they're moving fast, but their time is different.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, I've thought about that a lot. Yeah, it's very interesting. Time is definitely relative, and it's not the same for every living creature, that's for sure.
Yeah. So we've kind of moved away from lucid dreaming, but not quite away from lucid dreaming, because we were talking about psychedelics and...
Well, in time, you know, there's a lot of people experience time dilation in dreams.
Yes.
That was one of the things that I covered in my book, is the very weird phenomena that some people have where they sometimes experience what seems like, you know, many nights or weeks or months or even years, you know, in a single night. And, you know, how do you account for these types of experiences, you know, and... sometimes they're, you know, they're lucid, sometimes they're not lucid, but I mean, they're... How do you account for an experience where somebody has, my wife has had experiences where she has, you know, what seem like several nights or several days and nights inside of, you know, one night
right.
dream. You know, how does that happen? So it's maybe, you know, when we go into the dream realm, it's, you know, there's a whole different kind of time operating or something.
Right. There's also an experience that happens in the physical world where time stops or slows down till it almost stops. And it happens in a life-threatening emergency where you are totally focused in that moment. And I've experienced it a couple of times, but I got to talk to a Coast Guard rescue swimmer, the guys who jump out of helicopters into choppy water to go swim and save somebody on a boat.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, so do you ever experience that? And he said, we depend on it.
Yeah.
It gives us more time to work.
Oh, absolutely. I totally understand that. I understand that well. My my car, the steering column in my car several years ago, snapped, and I went flying off a cliff. And when my car went flying off a cliff, time, it just not only slowed down, it stopped. I mean, it completely stopped. I mean, there was, I mean, what probably happened in 1 second to me felt like, you know, a full 5 minutes, you know, where I felt like I was given a whole opportunity to like review my life and being, you know, given the opportunity to live or die. All these things happened in what must have been like this a fraction of a second. In waking world time, you know. So, yeah, there's definitely experiences that we could have where our consciousness, you know, really shifts, and as a result, time really changes.
Yeah, and I think it's being totally present in that moment. If you're present, there's no time. We somehow create time by our not paying attention and making believe that there is a linear thing going on. But if you're totally in the moment of enlightenment, as one would say in the meditation traditions, everything goes away.
Yeah.
It's now. There is an infinite now.
Exactly.
And so how does all of this relate to just being present with what's happening in the moment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And bits and pieces, you know, I love it because the lucid dreaming is another piece to a very large puzzle.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those, it's part of the whole, you know, it's part of the whole shamanic healing tradition that's, you know, and part of the spiritual traditions of many different, part of the traditions of many different spiritual traditions. So, yeah, it could be an important part of, you know, it's important. It was an important part of my particular healing, you know, my own particular healing. So I think for a lot of people, I think it could be like a missing puzzle piece once they discover it. People who don't know that it exists could be, wow, I didn't even know that you could do that. And, you know, and it could be the thing that really helps them to work through a trauma or to, you know, to get ideas for creative ideas for a project that's been perplexing them for whatever reason, or to, you know, or to, you know, get a creative idea for a new business or whatever. It's you know, it's enormous potential in lucid dreaming to heal and to create.
Just so the message is, wake up.
Well, isn't it interesting that people use the phrase, you know, awaken or wake up to mean both a, you know, a rise to a, you know, a spiritual state of consciousness, as well as, you know, when you arise in the morning from sleep.
Right.
People use that state awaken. Isn't it interesting that they use the same word?
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, there's an interesting similarity between the two about how you, what you thought to be reality, what you believed to be reality, wasn't quite what you thought it was. And then when you wake up, you realize that what you thought reality was actually just merely more of a model in your mind, and that you're part of something much bigger that you had forgotten. It's an interesting parallel.
Yeah, there are traditions that look at the dream time as being in a different place, in a different reality.
Oh, yeah.
And also look at life and death as similar to being awake and being asleep. There's a book I read a long time ago called The Kinavata Are Waiting, I think. And they would be in ceremony around, I think it was a hole or a fire or whatever it was, and they were waiting, and somebody would appear and tell stories and then disappear again. And the experience of that person was they were alive somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And they would go there to tell the story of what they were living out, and then go back.
Right. Yeah. There are many cultures that believe Well, they don't. You know, assume, I mean, we just assume that dreams just happen in our mind. I mean, we're conditioned from a very young age. You know, when you wake up from a nightmare, your mom says to you, "Oh, honey, you know, that was just a dream, just a dream."
Right.
You know, we're conditioned from this young age to disregard dreams and to not take them seriously and to think of them as just products of our imagination that just, you know, dissipate and don't worry about it. And there are, you know, many cultures that take dreams very seriously.
Right.
And consider them not figments of our imagination, but consider them actual excursions into other levels of reality where we're right. having true experiences and meeting up with other people, and that it's not just happening just inside of our minds, but actually happening in a space where we're interacting with other spirits or
right.
other dreamers and
doing healing work in dream time, where you can talk to those allies. See the person that needs to be healed in a different way, do things that wouldn't be possible in the physical world. There are a lot of traditions that work in dream time.
Yes, yes, absolutely. The Aboriginals in Australia, mm-hmm. And down in the Amazon as well, some of the work there
yeah.
in Africa.
Some of the Plains yeah. Indian tribes also talk about working in dream time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Fascinating, yeah. Fascinating.
And then here's Western culture, and where, you know, just ignore it, keep moving.
Yeah. Well, it's changing. I mean, there actually is there's you're talking about the mainstream culture, but there's an underlying subculture of people that is very interested in the potential of dreams and the reality
right.
of dreams. So, you know, there's quite, if you go into any bookstore and look in the psychology section under dreams, you'll find, you know, tons of books about dream work and lucid dreaming and creative dreaming and, you know, all these different, there's definitely a subculture of people who are interested in them, despite the mainstream culture's dismissal,
right.
general dismissal of them.
Right, right. Although even in that, there is frequently not the sense of you're being able to go there and do things.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
It's interpreting what they mean.
Exactly, yeah. There's more like dream dictionaries and things like that, and less of utilizing it as a real shamanic
right.
portal or a pathway into another dimension where you can, you know. I mean, I think the lucid dream books, some of them try to that approach, you know, mine certainly does. But you're right. It's not that common in Western culture, and it's certainly missing. You know, one of the reasons, you know, could be. I mean, it could be that we just naturally lucid dreamed more in our previous state of evolution or in earlier stages of history, because we didn't have electric lights. electric lights.
Well, we didn't have a lot of things.
But they've changed our pattern of sleeping very, very significantly in two ways. Before we had electric lights, we used to sleep in two times a day.
Right.
And now we only sleep in one time. When people sleep in two periods, they have more lucid dreams.
Unfortunately, we have to go into dream time to finish this because we just ran out of time.
Okay.
Which always happens because it's so much fun. And you're such a wonderful guest with wonderful things to bring up. My guest is David J. Brown. His book is Dreaming Wide Awake. And tell people again your website.
My website is www.mavericksofthemind.com. You can find me on Facebook. And my new book, Dreaming Wide Awake, was just published by Inner Traditions. And you can find that on the Inner Traditions website or on Amazon or on a bookstore near you.
Thank you so much, David. This has been great fun. Thanks for being on the show.
It's been a great pleasure. Thanks for having me, David.
My pleasure. And if anyone out there is curious about who's this guy David and what in the world does he do, you can go to househealing.com. And every kind of technology for getting in touch with me is there, including a scheduling link. I do a 20-minute free phone assessment of whatever's going on with a person, place, situation, business, whatever it might be. And we can see how my work might be helpful to you. If you want more about the show, we've been doing the show now for 5 years, 5.5 years. There are hundreds of incredible conversations with amazing people, and you can find them at the Farkas Files. empowerhealth.com. And you can listen from there, but the easiest way to listen to all the Empower Radio shows is to download the Empower Radio app for your smartphone. You can also listen on all the streaming media, iTunes Podcasts, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, we're everywhere. Just search for Empower Radio or search for the Farkas Files. And isn't it incredible that we can do it this way? People all over the world listening at their convenience, many, many different ways, and making it so simple. Couldn't do this even 5 years ago. So it's very, very exciting. And I appreciate that you do listen, because otherwise, why am I doing this? I'm really glad that you spend some time with us. So wherever you are, whenever you are, because you could be listening anywhere and at any time, thank you one and all for spending some time with us. This is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week. We'll be right back.